Yeah, that's our goal, is not to break shit unnecessarily.
Welcome to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast with Craig Hewitt and Dave Rodenbaugh. This is a podcast documenting the journey as self-funded business founders and sharing lessons, tips, and tricks for businesses following the same path as ours. The journey is long and winding, but we're glad you're joining us for it. And now it's time to go rogue with Dave and Craig.
All righty, welcome to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast. Today, Craig and I decided to change it up a little bit, and we are going to have our friend Phil Dirksen of WP Simple Pay and some other fine WordPress plugins that he's been crafting for a number of years. He's going to join us today. We're going to kind of have a little roundtable discussion about WordPress development and just kind of the happenings and goings on, best practices, how we're making things happen. Since we're all kind of now in the WordPress space, thanks to Craig's recent acquisition of Seriously Simple Podcasting. So welcome today, Phil.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on. Great to be on the show. And congrats to you guys for the recent acquisitions. Craig, of course, with the new podcasting, Seriously Simple Podcasting plugin, and Dave with Recapture.io. So interesting changes for you guys coming up.
Indeed, indeed. One of us moving away from WordPress, one of us moving towards it. So
I know, Dave, yeah, that's interesting. You're kind of a veteran of the plugin biz, and now you have a SaaS product for Magento. So that is interesting. And, of course, Craig just kind of diving into the plugin space now. So
yeah, it is interesting to look at joining the plugin space in the WordPress community from a longtime user, but definitely kind of seeing Phil, you and Dave live it firsthand relatively. You know, Phil, you were on the show a while back, and Dave, we talk a lot about the goods and the bads of the WordPress space as a business. Definitely going in eyes open, but know a lot of the good and some of the challenges that come along with it. So I think it'll be an interesting discussion we have here today.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so we have a list of about 5 or 6 different topics here. Which one do you guys want to jump into here first?
Pricing. I'll go with the easy one for me.
Yeah. Okay. So pricing in WordPress. What do you guys think of the trend toward the SaaSification of WordPress and, you know, things like automatic annual renewals and stuff like that? What's your experience been? Have you had, like, customer pushback or any feedback on that? Let's start with you, Phil, because I know with WP Simple Pay, you guys have got some changes going out for Stripe, and so you're like deep and thick into the payment of things.
But just before, yeah, Phil, you get started, if you don't mind giving folks who aren't familiar with your product a bit of a baseline on from a pricing perspective, what you guys do, and, you know, are you in the repo or not, and why did you make those decisions?
Sure. Yeah. So my main plugin that I own and sell online is called WP Simple Pay, and it lets you quickly set up a credit card payment form on your WordPress site using Stripe. And to avoid too much confusion here, it's a standalone solution. So meaning it's not a Stripe add-on for another plugin. It doesn't require like a full shopping cart or form builder plugin in addition to it. So it's just, you know, for quick payments. And the way I sell it is the business model that it has is the freemium model. So there is a free light version in the WordPress repository. Just search for Stripe in your WordPress admin, you'll find it. The pro version is a complete upgrade. It's not an add-on. Is sold at wpsimplepay.com, and yeah, we're working on a rewrite right now, and that's my main product or my main plugin. So as far as pricing goes, it's a one-time purchase with an annual renewal. We don't have automatic renewals yet, but that's definitely been proven to be a good idea, and so we are working at getting that going here in early 2017, hopefully. But yeah, I mean, we can, I think all of us can admit how hard finding or pricing is, and how to land on the right price. So I don't know what, I guess the general rule that I've used so far is, you know, try to base it as much on the value you provide, but that could also be a wide range, right? Depending on your customer. But high enough to keep those unprofitable customers out. You guys know what kind of customers I'm talking about. And then just, you know, you have to consider your support costs and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, that's a moving target, right? You know, what to price things at and all that kind of stuff.
So it's an interesting thought of pricing your product to stratify customers a little bit. So you're pricing it high enough to get just the tire kickers and the people that probably would be higher support burden off of your plate right from the beginning.
Right. Yeah. Well, because you have, you know, let's say you're at $19 and you notice just this trend of certain customers right away, they're sending you 5, 6, 7 support requests, you know, in the first couple of days. And I've just seen that it's almost always a lower price, you know, because I have different pricing plans for my plugin. So it's almost always the lower price customer that gets in and expects a lot and causes more headache than it's worth. So, you know, and sometimes you don't know if they're just kind of, it was on a whim that they buy it and they didn't really think through it and that sort of thing. So it's a tough call because you don't want to block everybody out that would be good customers at kind of a medium price, but, yeah, so that's kind of it. That's where I'm at right now.
Yeah, so I haven't done annual renewals yet, and you know, I even bought the recurring payments extension on EDD, and then for a variety of reasons, I think I got it in August. No, I actually got it in April, and then I got distracted with other stuff, and then completely forgot about it, and then all of a sudden in August, I got some email out of the blue from Pippin saying, "Hey, how's it going with recurring payments?" I think it was on some autoresponder sequence, and I'm like, oh crap, I forgot all about that. And you know, I feel like, oh man, I just missed 8 months of opportunity here to get everybody who's buying the plugin now onto an auto update thing right there. And I know that Pippin and Andrew Munro of Affiliate WP have both reported that when they've put this out there that they've seen a pretty significant uptick in renewals. I've had sort of a mixed bag on renewals. So I don't know if you do you do manual renewals right now, Phil?
Yeah. So I have the typical, sounds like we do the same thing where an email goes out asking them to renew. We've seen a lot of plugins, you know, in the past do this, you know, like Gravity Forms or whatever. They'll remind you a month out and 2 weeks out, and that's all using EDD software licensing, add-on. And, I also bought the recurring, EDD recurring add-on with my plans for this year. But speaking of pricing, I got it during a Black Friday deal or something, but EDD just raised their own prices for all their add-ons, like by 30 to 50%. I don't know if you saw that.
I did.
Good for them.
Yeah, good for them, exactly. But so, you know, they kind of realize they need to keep moving higher as well. And on kind of on that note, well, so anyway, yeah, I think their products have been using recurring now for over a year. So yeah, they've proven that it's working a lot better for them for sure. EDD, Affiliate WP, and you know, their properties.
And if you guys were starting from scratch today, selfish question, you would go the automatic renewal route?
Yes.
Absolutely. If you can, yeah, if I had to go back, like jump in a time machine and I could go back to the beginning of when I threw EDD on the site, I would turn on recurring payments from day one. But I would take the version that I have with me because the one in 2014 sucked. Right. That one didn't work. That's why I didn't use it. But today it works. And so you have the benefit of hindsight there. I would definitely do that. Just because whatever your cycle is, if it's monthly or annually, when the customer doesn't think about it, you are more likely to get that revenue, and they're, you know, if they don't like it, they're probably going to be more likely to go in and say, I don't want this. And then you have an opportunity to find out why, as opposed to them sort of passively dropping away. I see a lot of people passively sort of exit on the plugins, and you know, occasionally there's the hostile person that lashes out at me for sending them the renewal email. Your plugin stuff sucks. I didn't make any money off of it. I'm like, oh, okay, I didn't realize I was responsible for promoting your site, but okay.
Right.
Yeah, so you know, you get sort of those emails, but then there's a lot of them where they just don't renew at all and you don't know why. So if there's an automatic component to this, I have a feeling like you're going to get more activity response out of your users. So it's probably a better place to be in all. And, you know, the added revenue in your bank account doesn't suck either. But I just think from an engagement standpoint, you're going to get more stuff out of your customers that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you'll see the occasional email angry customer, I'm sure, if you turn on automatic renewals and they get charged and they didn't look at the four emails before that, warning them that they're going to get charged. You'll still have that. But overall, it sounds like it's been proven to be quite a boost in that recurring revenue.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. That makes sense. I would think, especially if you're delivering value over time with your plugin, which I think most of them would be, that charging annually, even for just maintaining support, and that, because that's not a burden that goes away for any of us. No.
Right. There's very few plugins that don't need updating over time that are, you know, premium supported plugins. So, and it's the support and the updates that they're paying for, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of support, what is your structure like for managing, I guess, both free and paid support?
So for paid support, we use Help Scout, and I actually have Kyle Brown's service, WP SaaS, WPSaaS.net, and his team is the ones that answer they're the first touch tier one support. And so they get as far as they can, and they've gotten to know my plugins pretty well. But they're not developers. So when a highly technical issue or a business issue comes up, gets passed on to myself or Nick Young, the developer that works with me. And we also post business hours on it's just a form on my site for submitting an issue. And so it's just, you know, 9 to 5, we do Eastern Standard Time just because that's where some of the tier one support is located. And, you know, we'll answer support here and there off hours, but it's just not expected that way. And it's nice for me on the Eastern Standard Time too, because I'm Pacific time and a bunch of tickets are answered before I even get up. So that's kind of cool. And then for free support, with the two free plugins that I have, the Simple Paid hardly gets any. So I'll just answer them on WordPress.org. I'll just answer them within a few days or so. And then my other plugin, Simple Calendar, it's got quite a bit more free support on WordPress.org. So I put a kind of a disclaimer sticky in there that says, hey, we'll answer these once a week approximately. And if you want faster email support, you know, we have these premium add-ons that you can buy. So, and that's about it.
So let me ask you a quick question about that, Phil. Have you seen any pushback, like customers that are giving you one-star reviews because they say your support sucks and they don't want to pay because WordPress should be free?
No, I haven't seen that specifically. I get the one-star reviews that I can't make sense of, you know, like,
yeah,
like some other thing happened to their site, or you know, sometimes you can't even understand what they're saying. But so the one-star reviews just seem pretty random, and I don't know. But it doesn't seem based on the fact that they don't get the free support. Yeah, at least not for a while, that hasn't happened. And I've seen other bigger plugins do the same thing, post a sticky saying, hey, you know, we monitor these forums, but it's a lot less frequent than our premium support and so on. So that's where I got the idea.
Yeah, that's pretty smart. You know, I wonder how much of this is a function. So I was going to throw something out here. I have a very different model for free versus paid support. So it turns out that, you know, if you're a customer of Business Directory plugin, the level of support that you get, whether you're free or paid, is actually pretty damn close either way. And that is by design.
That's a problem.
It is a problem, but here's why I don't change it. So there's a lot of people that come in and install the plugin, and they play around with it. They run into some issues. They haven't upgraded yet. Then they contact me or go onto the forum for support. Based on how quickly we respond, they get super excited that, ooh, this is a supported plugin. And then suddenly they get more and more successful, and maybe there's only a couple of interactions at that point. We usually point them to documentation, some other self-help resources right away. But at some point, I've seen a high number of these free customers convert into paid customers solely because of the support that we gave them when they were free users. So, and it's hard to tell who's going to do that. So in order for me to maximize my benefit there, we give the same kind of support to all the free users. The premium modules have a little thing on the page that says, hey, we prioritize you in the queue, yada, yada, yada. To a certain extent, that's true. Like if I see somebody in Help Scout and they come in and I look at the little sidebar over here, which tells me whether they're a paid customer or not, if they've spent something on the combo pack or a multi-site license or something like that, I'll definitely go the extra mile for them and I will help them out. Like if they ask a CSS question, somebody who's on the free stuff, I probably won't, you know, I'll give them the standard answer to say, here's an article that of how to use Firebug. But if it's somebody who's got a paid plan and they're having some CSS problems, I might have one of my developers go and spend 5 minutes and look up that CSS and tell them how to do that. So there is a distinction between free and paid, but if I don't provide that level of support on free, then I find that I'm getting fewer conversions to paid because they suddenly drop the plugin because that's what makes them convert into a paid user. So I'm wondering, all of that is sort of a preface to, I wonder how much of the fact that I have to provide this free support is the fact that I'm farther away from the money than you are, Phil.
Yeah, that's tough. And I know I've heard guys like Ninja Forms, and they're a huge plugin, and they do the same. I think they might direct people away from .org, but they're still providing free support because their core plugin is free.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah, I see what you're saying. And we have people submit pre-sales request, so they go into the same Help Scout queue, but they're marked pre-sales and they haven't bought yet either. So we have those. We have the indicator of if they actually bought something or not. I don't know. It's debatable. It's hard to measure some of that, but I see what you're saying.
Dave, how much of your support is free versus paid in terms of time, do you think?
Oh, gosh, I haven't measured that in so long. Yeah, I can't even come up with a number. I remember that the only number that's bouncing around in my head was there was a point at which I realized about 35% of my free users were converting into paid of some kind later on. Mm. But that was a long time ago. I mean, 2014 or something like that. I have done zero measurement on that since. It was high enough that I was like, all right, that's interesting. I'll provide free support. And since then, you know, we actually have different areas of support. So I have two guys, one for the classifieds, one for business directory, and they run the forums themselves. I mean, they escalate things to me, but if I see three issues a week from them, that's kind of rare. The rest of it just comes in through the contact form via email, and that's, you know, the more high-touch support. So those, the people that are time-sensitive, those are the ones that tend to go for the contact form. And you know, I do get some of the people that are free and then they like send me 5 requests in a day. And I'm like, oh God, you're one of those people.
Right.
Yeah. That's so frustrating. But you know, you try to help them as best you can. Sometimes I've gotten them to convert. Sometimes I've not, you know, usually the regret factor is pretty high. When somebody's emailing you a lot in free support, that's usually a bad sign.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, right now, all of our stuff is free. You know, the core plugin is free, but looking at adding, potentially converting one of the free add-ons right now to a paid or adding another paid module soon, I tend to think I'll want to adopt the same mindset that you have, Dave, which is if the support is really good on the free plugin, it acts as a marketing and sales channel, much less like a opportunity to have a conversation with a customer about what they're looking at and what challenges they're facing, to ways we could potentially improve the product in the future. But it is an investment. And I think if you don't measure that closely or keep an eye on how much time you're spending there and then what your quote conversion rate would be from the free solution to some sort of an add-on. Yeah, I can see it being a bad use of time, but some amount of it I think is necessary.
It can definitely eat you alive time and profit wise.
Yeah.
But Craig, we don't have a right or wrong answer for you, but it's an important decision, because what you decide and build now, and this goes for anything that, you know, if you're building a new plugin or, you know, fleshing out a new premium version or rewriting one, I guess, but it is deciding on that business model. And wanted to, so I just watched Pippin's WordCamp US talk, which was just a couple of weeks ago, well, early December. And we'll link it up in the show notes, but basically about 19 minutes in, he pointed out two of what he thought were EDD's biggest mistakes. And so he said, we've been around for 4 years plus, and personally for me, I've used EDD since they launched, because that was about the time, as right after I got my first paid plugins launched. So they started a third-party add-on marketplace. So this is a little bit separate, but that was their first mistake. And he goes into detail there, but basically that he got into supporting, they had to basically support and manage other developers' plugins that were not part of their company.
Mm.
So that got messy. So that was his first big mistake. His second one is he really regrets using the freemium pricing model. Okay, so, but he's locked into it now. So, and what he means there is not necessarily no add-on, or basically a free core plugin like you guys have, and I have with my Google Calendar plugin, Simple Calendar, and paid add-ons. And I'm quoting him here, the worst thing they ever did. And... But
as opposed to a pro version, you mean? Like
correct,
you have?
Yeah. Well, and you know, he did the same thing. He said they were looking at WooCommerce. It was working for them at the time. Why wouldn't it work for them? And it did get them off the ground, but the ramifications were not what he wanted. So because he said, because of the add-on model, EDD is not a profitable project. Yet his other two, which are not premium or free core plugins, Affiliate WP and Restrict Content Pro, those are much more profitable. And so, and he again pointed out Gravity Forms, which has add-ons, but everything's paid, including the core. And you have to listen to, there's some numbers, and basically the, I don't know if it was cost per acquisition or just, they measured somehow the profit on each sale or something like that. And it was just a huge difference. So give that a listen and see what you think. And, and then Dave, you've had freemium with a core free plugin for a long time now. I mean, I know you're probably just used to it being that way and you're not going to change it. Right. But
yeah, I mean, like Pippin, I'm locked in, right? In order for me to be on the repository, I have to have a free plugin, and that's the only reason I've ever kept it free, is because that's my number one channel of acquisition, right?
Right, yeah. Right. And it's it's a big one for me as well, even though mine's more the you upgrade the whole plugin to the pro version. But yeah, being on the repository has been such a big, you know, that's a big source of my traffic, so...
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I've flirted with the idea at one point of making Business Directory a fully paid plugin, but then I wasn't sure if I wanted to have like the free versus pro, and then what would I have as the free features, and then what do I do with all these customers that are already out there that have bought the free add-ons? Yeah, once you pick a business model, you're kind of stuck with it, unless you're just totally ready to you know, burn your customers to the ground and say, fuck you, because that's effectively what you're doing, right? you're going to make somebody mad, and probably a lot of somebody's doing it, and that's something you have to be careful of. So the right business model makes all the difference in terms of long-term stability. And when you're locked into one, like I pretty much bought both of these plugins and came into it this way. So for me, it was always, how can I add more? How can I make it more valuable? How can I increase the worth of and the motivation for somebody to upgrade to one of these? But, you know, I'm still stuck with all these free users. So,
yeah. So just, I mean, to clarify and kind of spitball on it a little bit, Pippin was saying not necessarily that the entire plugin is free and that they're using the add-on module business model as opposed to upgrading the whole thing to pro. Was he saying that would be a better way to monetize it, or none of it would be free? Because it's kind of different, right? Like Gravity Forms, nothing is free, but...
No, that's a little bit different. I think he wasn't actually, again, I think he still preferred the add-on model, but just that the core plugin would also be paid. Mm. So...
And I would like to point out that Pippin might be looking back at this in a slightly rose-colored glasses way. Pippin's, when he came on with Easy Digital Downloads, he was kind of an unknown. And then after he had EDD and was successful, that's when he really launched Restrict Content Pro, Affiliate WP. And he already had both an audience, some fame, and an existing customer base to promote to. So naturally, those two products are going to have a higher success rate than the original one because he doesn't have to do scratch customer acquisitions, so to speak. He can actually promote it. Because I was on the EDD list, I absolutely got promotion emails for both of those products. So I know for a fact he leveraged his existing customer list on both of those.
Yeah, I love Pippin, but when he sends one email, I get four of them because I'm on all those lists.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I am too.
Yep.
I think that's something to consider here as well. Like, would he have been as successful with his other two products if he did not have EDD in the customer mailing list to start from? Would he be trumpeting their success and their profitability? I think the profitability would still be there, but he would probably have some harder time with customer acquisition because he wouldn't have, 20,000 people to email when he launches a new product.
Right, right. And another thing on, if I can kind of diverge more towards the, architecture development side of add-ons versus not, I wanted to bring this up too, Craig, since you're considering some decisions here moving forward too. So, the whole add-on model in general, let's take the free versus paid core out of it for a minute. A lot of WordPress developers and actually prefer it for lots of add-ons. Every piece of functionality they want or they need, they just want an add-on for it. They don't want it in the core plugin. And that's fine, and I get it. But I've found that as a user and as kind of from both sides, from a user and a plugin developer slash, business owner, that the more you can stick into, the more you can put in your one plugin, if it meets enough of your customers' needs, I think it should all go into one plugin. I shouldn't say this is for everyone, but again, and the use cases. So, from a user experience side, Dave, you know this from running EDD, you have Easy Digital Downloads core running, and then you have software licensing and Stripe. And I don't know about you, but I have about a dozen EDD add-ons.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Similar.
Okay. And so we're the customers of that, and that's what we experience. So this means multiple plugins that we have to download and update. And then we have license keys for each of these. So you have to plug in a separate license key for each add-on. And I actually tried working around that, kind of, hacking EDD a little bit to make one license key work for the WP SimplePay Pro and its add-on. And it's working right now, but it's not ideal, and it's never really been built back into EDD software licensing. So it's not working how I want it to. So, and then I also get customers that will update the core plugin, but not the add-on, and vice versa. The add-on, but not the core plugin. And so you know, sometimes it's a licensing issue. Sometimes it's just they missed one and got the other. And so that adds support. I've also, we've also had to add extra, make sure a bunch of extra codes in place so the add-on and core plugin can talk to each other. And we're talking, you know, PHP and JavaScript and adding, you know, jQuery triggers to make sure things are communicated back and forth. And I just thought a lot of, you know, you want to make your plugins extensible with, you know, WordPress hooks and all that. But I thought a lot of what we did was unnecessary. So, and I probably made the mistake of the, you know, Stripe subscriptions as an add-on to the core plugin. And so some people don't need it, but it still meets probably half of my customers' needs, or half of my customers want to use that. So it probably should have gone in from the beginning. But anyway, that's something to consider. And developers get worried about, you know, bloating the plugin and making, you know, as long as the code doesn't run until the user says they want to run it, it's not going to slow down anything. It's going to be a little bit bigger plugin file size, but that's about it. And I've seen examples of this out there. Advanced Custom Fields Pro, I talked to this the developer there, Elliot Condon. He moved all his add-ons. He had them all add-ons and moved them all into the core plugin. John Turner has also done this with Coming Soon Pro. And both of them actually still use the add-on terminology on their site. But when you get it, you're just getting a single plugin.
And then technically for the user, they delete the free version and install the pro, and all the data migrates over into the pro version?
Well, that's a little bit different. They have that, and that's upgrading from light to pro. But after they get pro, they don't have to install five or six more add-ons.
Right.
Just one. Yeah. And a big example of this is actually Jetpack. So it's a free plugin, but it's only one big plugin with about 40 different features. And, you know, a lot of developers don't like it. It's a lot of bloat, this and that. But from what I've read and heard, that it's been tested that it doesn't degrade performance for as much as they know and have tested. It's been around for a while now. And what's on by default when you install it is nothing that will affect the performance. You have to toggle whatever you want on that is performance related.
You have to toggle it on to start slowing down your site instead of just installing it right out of the box. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you want those 15, you know, social sharing buttons on your site, they make you turn it on. So.
Right. No, Phil is absolutely right about that additional complexity in there. When you were talking about all the extra code you had to put in. So I remember when my developers were talking about the whole licensing thing, and when we took it out of the EDD core and put it into our own plugin, we had to put it in our core plugin, and then all of the premium add-ons basically include it indirectly from the core, so they didn't have to add it in themselves, and we didn't have to maintain like 16 copies of it. And there's also some code that detects, you know, if I'm a premium module at version Y, do I have at least core of X or higher installed to make sure that I'm compatible? And if I'm not compatible, then I pop up an admin warning. So I'm one of those guys that shows up 35 admin warnings if things are going south. Yeah, we're consolidating
that
now.
Yeah, better to tell them early. Yeah.
But no, it's better to tell them something is seriously wrong, because at least they'll freak out and contact you and find out why. And then you can help them get through it. But there is a lot of extra complexity of having these add-ons involved here. And that doesn't even involve, like, so everything that Phil talked about was like the runtime aspect of it and the ongoing piece with the license keys and the libraries and stuff like that. There's also the sales and the maintenance aspect of it from your perspective. So if you've got an update to push out right now, if I've got five modules that get updated, I have to create five different zip files and I have to update five different instances in EDD's download module thing there, and I've got to update five versions, and I've got five readmes to tag, and yeah, you know, I mean, it does up your work a little bit, especially if you want to be frequent release guy, which people like.
Right. So again, just something to think about. I mean, so far WooCommerce is still, you know, tons of add-ons plus the core plugin. I mean, they've been around a while too, I guess, but. And yeah, I don't know what the number, you know, is it there's a, at some point, yeah, you want to make something an add-on if it's only used by, say, 20% or less of your customers and is a decent amount of code or something. So anyway, I mean, there's no, I don't know what the answer is here, but it's something to consider and balance that, you know, user experience, what kind of code addition does it take you to do it the add-on model way or not, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, we have free add-ons right now, 4 free add-ons. So I think we're stuck in the add-on, you know, mindset and business model for now. But I can see us adding a sort of independent, non-WordPress solution onto the back of it too. So we might not have to get too into that with licensing and stuff. So we'll see.
Well, let's move on to our next topic here, because I think we beat the pricing thing to death at this point. pricing and support and the business models. Let's talk a little bit about imposter syndrome and how you guys feel about not being a developer on the product anymore, and what do you do with your time instead of writing code?
All right. I'll start, I guess. Well, Craig, you never really been in the code, right?
No, huh?
Okay, so you skipped that step. That's
good.
But
he can spell code because he's in sales.
So. That's right.
So, yeah, I've been a developer for a long time. I still love doing it, and I'm kind of in that. I'm still in an in-between stage, so to speak, because I still code. I still work on the plugins, not full time. So it's probably about half on that and half working on the business. And I've only been working on the plugin business for almost 2 years. That's about when I quit my last full-time job to work on this. I don't try to be like a rock star WordPress developer at this point, but it's hard to kind of stay away when I need to focus on non-coding stuff. I always want to know enough of what's going on and architecture and user experience and that kind of stuff and be aware of that. But I definitely would like to, I'd rather work with other people who are better developers than I. And right now we're still pretty small. It's just Nick, my full-time developer, and I. And so it's like 1.5 developers right now. So, but the other side of that is, I guess imposter syndrome is, I want to be that rock star dev sometimes, but I know I shouldn't to push the business forward. On the business side, I think it's also kind of affecting things because I haven't put all my efforts into the business side either because of that. So, it's a lot of it's some decisions I made. Like I have 2 plugins right now with Google Calendar plugin and the Stripe plugin. They're 2 different customer bases. So that's tough to be able to focus on business and marketing for both of them when I don't have a bigger team to kind of split up development for both. But I know that can work for some people in WordPress if they have a kind of a focused set of plugins for a single group of customers. Like John Turner, I mentioned, he still does his development and runs the business. Dan Cameron, Sprout Invoices, he's the same way. So there are examples of that working for some guys. But me personally, I definitely would like to get some more help and some talented people so I can focus on the business more.
You know, it's funny. Imposter syndrome definitely strikes home with me, even though, I'm not a developer. I don't think I will become a good developer, but I do want to understand enough to dig it if I have to, if there's something sort of catastrophically wrong in the middle of the night on Sunday or something like that. I would like to be able to go in and dig around and figure out what's going on and make changes if I had to, because I feel like if you run a software product, you should understand what's going on. To a pretty decent extent, I don't really understand the inner workings of it, and that kind of makes me feel like, wow, what am I doing here? But I hope that, you know, what we've learned with running Podcast Motor, I hope to be able to run the business side of things pretty well. But that, I guess my biggest area of growth is in understanding the technology better. So it's a focus of mine just to get comfortable enough with what's going on and work with the developers. And then just run the business. I don't think I'll ever be a good developer, but I do want to get a lot better because I think it's necessary to really understand what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. As far as development, developers on both of your companies, what's the makeup right now?
Oh, I have two full-time guys on support. Well, they're not really full-time. They're like 10 hours a week. And then I have two full-time developers, one per plugin. Although right now what we've now switched to is a model where one of them is handling support for both plugins and the other one is focused on feature development. And we're coming to the end of the first sprint where they've gone and done a whole bunch of feature work and a whole bunch of bug work, and they're merging that all back together this week and next week. And then we're going to start doing some testing on that so that we can have a big release probably like late January at this point, because one of my developers is going away for a couple of weeks on vacation. But that's the makeup so far, and I think this model has been more successful than having individual developers on the individual plugins, because the progress was much more spotty, because you would always get interrupted with support. And I wanted to try to give them more focused time in that development. And so, you know, we've only been running this about 2 months. I think we started in October. And so far it's been better. You know, there was some bumps along the way. Like, there was a couple of times where support got away from one of my guys, Willington. And it wasn't a fault of his. He just got tagged with a bunch of really complex issues. And he couldn't keep up with all the simple stuff that was coming in, too. So I had to bring off Jorge for a little bit. And I think he spent like 3 days. And we totally caught up on the queue after that. And it was good. But, yeah, I mean, you know, there's some logistic hassles that go with that.
Yeah. For us right now, we'll be bringing on our first developer after the first of the year. And he'll be primarily just to develop the premium modules and the technology, the paid technology that we'll be creating. And our support right now is all free, and it's just something I do. I go into WordPress.org and reply to the message boards there. And it's fine. It takes 20 minutes a day. It's not a big deal. And I don't anticipate the developer moving into that realm. He'll just be for premium support, I think.
As far as imposter syndrome goes, though, I don't really feel like, you know, as a developer, when I bought the plugins, I tried to jump into PHP development and was sort of successful with it, but I wasn't as interested in that as I was interested in being the marketing sales guy on the plugins anyway. So it was pretty easy for me to hire a developer and sort of step out of that role and sit back and say, hey, I'm the owner of the plugins. Oh, you've got a technical question? I'll be happy to forward that to my developers and we'll get back to you within 48 hours or whatever. And I've really not received any sort of pushback on that, or somebody was like, how come you don't develop your own plugins, or, you know, nothing like that. Mostly it's just straight up, oh, okay, great. You're the owner of the plugin and you're responding to me? Wow, that's awesome. So it's, you know, being an imposter either business-wise or technical-wise has apparently served me okay so far. So I guess I'll keep doing it.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
But Dave, with Recapture, do you plan on the same thing there, or will you get into Node.js and all the technology there?
Yeah, see, it's going to be different with Recapture at this point, because I really feel like I have the same thing that you said earlier, which is I need to understand what's going on with this whole product, because if something goes south, I don't have a developer right now to handle it. The guys that I bought it from, it was a pair of brothers, and one of them was the developer and one of them was the sales and marketing guy. So I don't have an immediate replacement for that. And if I'm going to train somebody else, I need to understand things well enough to A, be able to make architectural decisions that make sense, and B, until I get another developer hired, which is probably a couple months down the road, I've got to be able to do stuff. So I'm jumping in, I'm learning Node.js, I'm splitting my time between marketing, sales, and development. And yeah, it's a totally different decision, and it's for very opposite reasons. You know, there's not quite enough profitability to the business right now for me to hire a developer and feel comfortable with all of that. I need to grow the business more before I can get to a level where the developer is going to be sustainable. If I were to do it right now, it'd be kind of like a one-time deal, and I don't want to do that. So yeah, it's a different decision for recapture.
Mm, that's good. I mean, it's good to hear your logic through that. It makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one thing that we've seen with Seriously Simple Podcasting is changes with WordPress core and updates to core affecting how the tool works. It's, you know, we don't get a lot of support, but what we do has revolved around that a little bit. And Dave, I know that when you guys did your big release over the summer, you ran into some WordPress incompatibility issues. How do you guys test for that as you're finishing up development of something before you release? What do you do to test potential WordPress or PHP conflicts?
Well, basically, we're running any kind of WordPress beta locally as we're doing development. So as soon as they announce, you know, WordPress 4.7, you know, first beta one, we're running that, you know, on all our test sites and things like that. And so that gives us, just in our local environment, gives us some time to work out any kinks. And they have cropped up in the past. And, you know, but we're still also, and this is one thing we want to change, but we're manually testing a lot of things, especially for the more major releases. So we have, you know, some of that's checklists of testing. And once, or the last time we did a big major release for Simple Pay, we actually hired WP SaaS to, you know, as an extra service to run through all these scenarios. So that worked out well for that. But yeah, I don't have unit testing, automated testing, that kind of stuff in place yet. And definitely want to do that at some point, or maybe even as I do this 3.0 launch, get that in place.
Yeah, it's kind of a mixed bag. So with the big switchover, we're doing a big custom post type migration for AWPCP because the plugin is so old at this point. It existed pre-custom post types. And there's just so much that it did that was this own one-off hack stuff that we have to bring it back in line with custom post types so that it's just more compatible with the WordPress ecosystem right now. As part of that, Willington went through, and the very first thing they asked me if he could do was to go and create unit tests for the entire thing so that we could verify the behavior of AWPCP as it existed today, and then start from that as a platform of stability and then migrate everything to custom post types, because then you can break the shit out of everything and then know what's broken and what's not. you know, it sounds crazy, but that's exactly what we did. And that the frustrating part was waiting for him to finish all those unit tests, and I knew it was a cost we would pay up front, and I knew it would take a lot of time, and I knew it would basically mean we're standing still development-wise for weeks. And that's exactly what happened. But when he was done, then he was able to go in and start migrating stuff to custom post types, and he was he was more productive on it as a result of that. So that was a positive thing. We don't have that on Business Directory plugin. We're going to have to pay that cost at some point. I don't know when that's going to be, but we haven't done so yet. Jorge really wants to do that. I support him in doing that, but because it is the plugin that's driving more revenue and more support, I've got to be a little more sensitive to customers' feature requests. So we've been pushing forward on features more than we have on that. For releases, the guys usually go through and spin up some Vagrant instances, and they'll do testing on a couple of major versions of WordPress. So they'll test like the current one and maybe like one back. And if it's like a big release, they might go one farther back than that. I've also had them go and do a variety of PHP. So they're testing slightly older WordPress, but like really old PHP, because sometimes we run into that a lot. We get a lot of compatibility issues, and thank God that PHP 5.2 is now drying up on most hosting companies, because that was a source of just so many support requests, where some stupid library wasn't available on PHP 5.2, or the syntax wasn't available on PHP 5.2, and it's been in since 5.3 or higher. But nowadays, that's a less of a problem, because it seems like the hosting companies have finally gotten with the program and are starting to push that more. Or if you go and say, hey, you're running PHP 5.3, you really need to upgrade to at least 5.6, because we're heading to 7 soon. And they'll say, oh, sure, we can do that. We do it on request. We're not just doing a blanket upgrade of everybody, which I get. You know, they don't want to have 5 million support requests. But So we go through all of that, and then there's a series of tests that I also have them run, which I call the standard install upgrade test. So they'll take an older version of the plugin, they'll run it through a full upgrade cycle to see what that's like and see if there's any glitches. And then they'll repeat the same thing with a scratch install, again, to see if there's any glitches so we're not missing anything in there. And then once they've done all of that, they put together the release notes, and then I update all the files and sync up stuff in the repositories and push the release out, and then they tag stuff. That's basically how it goes.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, ours has been, from what I understand from Hugh, it's been pretty manual. He has a couple of test sites aside from his local development environment that he tests on. But yeah, it doesn't seem like nearly as much unit testing like you have now, Dave, or even Vagrant or anything like that. I think that's a smart thing for us. I mean, breaking someone's podcast feed is a bad deal. I mean, it's like anything. Breaking someone's site is a bad deal. So one of the biggest things is ensuring that whatever work we do doesn't break people's sites. And we're actually going to introduce some functionality to kind of double check that as we go. Some, you know, like your pop-ups that come up, Dave. We're gonna give some more robust functionality to that, I think, because it's especially for a free plugin, I think that it should be kind of self-sufficient and not breaking. That sounds obvious now that I say it, but yeah, that's our goal, is not to break shit unnecessarily.
It's a good goal. I had to learn that the hard way a few times. So, I mean, yeah, we do. We put up notices in the admin or whatever is when it's, you know, the PHP version's too low. If the Lite and Pro plugins are running at the same time, which has caused issues in the past. And then you just kind of stop executing more code and throw it, and you have the admin message so people know. So, and on the PHP side too, it's nice to see that just recently WordPress is now recommending PHP 7 and along with, of course, it's on their recommended page, but also they're not going to recommend hosts that are running less than PHP 7 or that don't set you up with SSL by default. So,
ooh, that's
moving
nice.
In the right direction. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Phil, thanks for coming on the show today. I appreciate it. It was great to chat through kind of, you know, WordPress best practices and ideas and challenges with you guys. I look forward to a lot more discussions. I know Dave is potentially moving a different way entirely, and that's cool. And I'm excited to be moving in. And I know you're still knee deep in it. So it's cool to chat through it, and we'll have to do this again sometime.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Phil.
Talk to you guys later.
Yep, bye.
And that's our episode for this week. If you have any questions or comments, please let us know at podcast@roguestartups.com. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Rogue Startups. And be sure to visit roguestartups.com for full show notes on each episode. If you're enjoying the show, we'd sure appreciate a review in iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.